Why should someone not just search a product online? Why should they search for you? And I think a big part of that is, on our side, on the fulfillment side, is making sure that it arrives with personality.
It's the E-commerce Master Plan podcast, here to help you solve your marketing problems and grow your e-commerce business. Cutting through the hype to bring you inspiration and advice from the e-commerce sector and beyond. Here's your host, Chloe Thomas.
Hello and welcome. It's great to have you here. Thank you for hitting play and choosing to listen to one of our inspiring guests. This is one of our masterclass episodes. So we are exploring one of those e-commerce topics that you really need to get right with an expert in getting it right. And this time our topic is fulfillment. Getting the product to the customer, the right product, as quickly as possible, in the right way. What does it look like in 2024? What are customers expecting? How can you make it happen? And what are the building blocks that sit beneath creating that great unboxing experience that you need to be delivering? To help us with that, we've got the co-founder of a quite unique fulfillment company in the UK who are doing some amazing things for brands who want to create that brilliant unboxing experience. So great to have him on board. I thoroughly enjoyed this chat. I think you will too, and you'll learn a lot as well. Please listen right to the end so you don't miss out on his top tips, because there are some stonking suggestions there, especially the tool top tip, which isn't tech, it's something else. So make sure you listen right to the end, everybody. And now to introduce our special guest. Will Martin is co-founder and financial director at Little Dart Fulfillment, a 3PL providing bespoke e-commerce fulfillment that's as unique as your business. Hello, Will.
Hi, Chloe. Thanks so much for having me on.
Brilliant to have you here. Really excited to get to talk about the much ignored area of e-commerce that is the most important bit, because it actually means getting the product to the customer. Before we get into that, though, how did you end up working in the world of e-commerce and, dare we say it, fulfillment?
To be honest, it was my parents. We're from a very e-commerce-backed family. My parents started their first e-com brand in 2004. I think we were still on dial-up down here in Devon when they actually launched their first website, launching their second in 2008. The first, it's called the Honey Doctor, second Little Dart models. And then when I left university, Dad and I took on a model aeroplane company selling online. And so I spent a long time out manufacturing in the Far East and then working, basically building a website and selling model aircraft. Bravo Delta Models is a name if anyone's a keen aviator. And then I suppose I had a little gap. Having spent a year doing that, I worked out I couldn't fill a VAT return in. I worked out that was pretty fundamental to running a business, let alone actually sort of knowing the financial side. So I got myself a job at one of the big four in London and packed my bags, left Devon and went to the big city. Meanwhile, my brother, who's my co-founder, he's a software developer. He ended up coming back to my parents' e-com shops in about 2018, looking at their sort of omni-channel, or as I think he referred to it, the omni-shambles of updating inventory across various sales channels, trying to map everything into one. And he worked out that, you know, this could be systemized through tech. So he spent a long time looking at that, putting systems in place. And then effectively when he had the sort of systems in place and buoyed and sort of, I suppose, like most of the e-com world, saw the enormous growth through the pandemic, went, this could be something that we could offer to other e-com shops. Meanwhile, I'd moved myself into outsourcing consultancy, and it was sort of a perfect match, really. You know, as a software developer and a consultant, and that was it. We sort of went, well, look, let's find the e-commerce fulfillment market. We looked at the market. We identified that there was a sort of significant gap for brands that wanted to retain what made them them. A lot of fulfillment was big warehouses. We like to say we think outside the brown box, as most of the market when we started very much was brown box focused, you know, very prescriptive over how large the product was, what a minimum order quantity had to be, and all of these different things. And we sort of thought, well, look, we think we can probably do better than that. So with my brother's systems, we can provide the tech backed. And then effectively with my addition to the party, I suppose, was going, well, let's make this bespoke and work with these brands to try and make them as successful as they can be and try and provide true frictionless fulfillment on their growth plans.
So many questions I could ask you about your journey, but I'm going to dive into the fulfillment piece because A, it's what we're supposed to be talking about, but B, it's, I think, one of the really interesting things about what you guys are doing, which is why of all the people in fulfillment I could have got on the podcast to do our fulfillment masterclass, I came to you, which is, I said, you know, earlier that fulfillment gets kind of ignored. And it's actually such an important part of the e-commerce journey. And as e-commerce becomes more of an evolved space where we are more competitive and we need to care more about retention, I think any brand who's not worrying about the unboxing experience and the speed which things go out on, and therefore all the things we're going to be talking about today that come to actually create that in a good way, it's those one-size-fits-all fulfillment centers work for some companies, but they're just that unpersonalized approach, I think, is why a lot of people fail to outsource and hold on to it for so long. It's because they can feel how important it is in the emotional journey of the relationship with the customer.
Yeah, absolutely right. I think brand loyalty in the current age of e-commerce is becoming an increasing struggle, and e-commerce brands have to really look at how they achieve this. One example, I suppose, of sort of this in the real world is with Amazon. I mean, I buy from Amazon. I'm sure everyone listening to the podcast buys from Amazon. They have a fantastic fulfillment model. I mean, it arrives tomorrow. With Amazon, though, I search a product and I buy the first one with a blue tick because it arrives. If you're competing in that field and you want brand loyalty and you want lifetime customer value and all of those things, you've got to try and drag people back to you. What makes your brand better than everything else? And why should someone not just search a product online? Why should they search for you? And I think a big part of that is, on our side, on the fulfillment side, is making sure that it arrives with personality.
So how are the brands you're working with building that personality in? Are we talking like colourful boxes, tissue paper, inserts, free gifts? What's making things stand out and build that brand in the unboxing experience at the moment?
Yeah, so colourful packaging, it's amazing how even little things like branded tape change a brand box from being something that sort of sits on your doorstep to being something you're quite excited to see. Other little things, gift notes, the ability to sort of add a handwritten gift note or a free gift or even a sticker. All these little things, which I think generally people sort of think, oh, they're just tiny things, and they end up usually in the recycling bin. But they matter so much when someone's opening that product box of remembering your brand.
This is a slightly weird example, but I'm going to roll with it, which is I'm currently a bit Vinted obsessed. And one of the things I really love about Vinted is you never know what the packaging is going to be because they encourage their sellers to package in recycled packaging. And I've had some phenomenal packaging coming through. And you look at it like, well, I know what I've ordered, but I've no idea if that's the mug, the hooks, the book, or the t-shirt. I don't know. It could be anything because it adds to the Vinted experience because the unboxing experience matches with the mission and everything else. So totally get what you're saying about that. Those small things have a real impact in the eyes of the customer. What else should we be doing then to create a best of breed fulfillment system, I suppose, that creates the output that we want of creating this good reaction with the customer? What goes into that, Will?
You need to get the basics right first. And that needs, you need a good system. You need a good tech system behind you. And you need to do the simple stuff well. And as fulfillment, that means your goods in is fast. So there's no point having pallets of stock sat in the lobby, as it were. It needs to be booked in on the shelf, ready for sale quickly. The tech then needs to talk to all your sales channels via API fast. And then ultimately, you need to do the actual job of the fulfillment well. You know, the order needs to come in, it needs to go out. Once you get the basics right, and once you get the sort of the standard fulfillment, goods in to goods out, done, then I think you need to then, a best-in-breed fulfillment house looks at effectively how we can best help the brand. Fulfillment houses are an enormous part of the physical delivery of your brand to your consumer. We feel, as a little of fulfillment, we feel as a partner to the brands in the warehouse. I often say the rather crass saying that we only make money if you make money. There's no point beating around the bush on this, is that we want to do everything we can to make sure your customer comes back and again, again, and again. Your order volume goes up and up and up because we only make money on the order volume.
Talking about money, well, I've often seen brands really pushing fulfillment companies on price. And it almost becomes a completely price-driven decision rather than all the value adds we're talking about that actually create a good fulfillment experience and actually enhance your brand rather than potentially damaging it. It's kind of weird that the most labor-intensive part of the e-commerce experience, the bit which can absolutely screw up all the work you've done on the front end if you get it wrong, that is so people-dependent, is the one where brands screw the suppliers on price the most. Now, I'm not saying we should be or would be willing to pay double what we're paying for fulfillment, because it has to be cost effective. But I guess what I'm trying to say is the team part is so important for a fulfillment house to work well. So how does one make that work well in a business which is so dependent on the people but is so cost sensitive?
Really good question. I think cost and fulfillment is, you're right, it's traditionally something that people see, you know, can we push the price down as much as possible? Because it is seen as a bottom line cost. I think what's forgotten a lot of the times is how many of the costs of fulfillment is outsourcing. So storage, insurance, people, shipping, all of that is sort of wrapped up in one invoice, which is why people sort of push back on it and try and get it as cheap as possible. We don't say we're as cheap as possible. I've never run with the tagline of little dark fulfillment, cheapest fulfillment about, because we're not. We base all of our models on time and space. And a key point for us, like you said about the team, is the only reason we can deliver better fulfillment is because I truly believe that my team are totally and truly exceptional. And the only way you get totally, truly exceptional people working for you is you make it a great place to work and you pay them fairly. We are in the process, and I'm hoping by the time this podcast goes out, we'll be members of the Living Wage Foundation. That's just one way. Other ways are just generally trying to make it a nice place to work. Because warehouse work, let's face it, is not the sexiest job in the world. But if you can make it as nice a place to work as possible, you get good people, you get low staff turnover, you get people that really can understand the brands they're working on. I mean, our warehouse team are fantastic and they speak to all of our clients on a first name basis. The connection means that my team understand the brand and understand the model. We try and get all of our clients as they onboard to give a talk to the warehouse team that they're going to work with, which we found has meant, again, this greater feeling of connection between the person packing the order and the brand.
That's quite mad. Quite often you'll hear of brands briefing the call center or the customer service team who have the actual interaction with the customer and need to understand what's behind it. But to actually be briefing the people who, to put it bluntly, are putting the product in the box, that's a kind of an above and beyond strategy. But you find it really pays off.
Yeah, it really pays off. I mean, it's interesting to, I think, for the team. And we're a very small team. We're on two sites. We're currently 11 people, rising to 20 this summer. And it really does pay off. It really builds a sort of a genuine sense of ownership and connection between what the team are actually doing when they pack the order, who they're actually packing the order for, and giving it sort of that level of responsibility of my team know exactly which client, which company they're packing for, and ideally their corporate voice, so we can try and push as much of that into the actual packing as possible.
You said about, you know, paying the living wage and that you've got this great team of people. E-commerce is seasonal. I doubt you've managed to crack, maybe you have, but I doubt you managed to crack the holy grail of any fulfillment, which is you're doing as many parcels in January, March, July, and December as you are in any other month of the year. So how, with the team part, the least scalable thing in e-commerce, how do you manage that with peak?
So, I mean, we do try. If someone selling bulbs, for example, that might sell in March, April, perfect, send them my way. We're quite lucky in our current point. Unlike sort of the large sheds, I suppose, and that we're continually growing. So in that sense, we're sort of building our team up all the way up to September. And then we've got a team which is slightly too large but for the volume. And then we hit December. I think when we get to the point where we haven't got such levels of growth in the warehouses, the key thing I've always been told is that the warehouse should be running at 70%. Like everyone in e-com, you take the hit during the slow months, but it means that during the high months, when all of your brands want to expand 1.5, 2x, you then, one, have the capacity of space, because that's a real struggle. You know, you can't run out of space in October. It's, you know, a death knell. And people.
No one wants to see their pallets in the car park in October.
No. You know, a pallet in a car park in May for 4 hours, fine. A pallet in a car park in the pouring rain in October, absolutely not. And also people. And it means that, you know, we enter peak ideally with a good team of that's grown and one that we can sort of scale up to meet demand. But it is a real, it's a real struggle in the filament world. And I think it's a real challenge to try and manage that. But again, number one thing is to try and build in each warehouse a diverse portfolio of brands and companies selling such diversity that you can effectively try and have a flat line across the year. Although obviously, you know that that's a sort of a slight pipe dream. But you can try. And we do try, and we spend a lot of our time when we're working with potential brands coming into the warehouse. We spend a lot of time with them to work out where they fit, to look at their projections and their forecasts in great detail. And it falls into our pricing model as well, as to, again, which sort of gap they fit in our yearly numbers.
Got you. Just before we get into forecasting and projections, because I have to ask you about that, it would be crazy not to. But just anyone listening who is selling gardening products or selling, having your peak at any time other than October, November and December, take the message. You are gold to a fulfillment center. Do go in for a good price. That's like a public service announcement. Bear that in mind. Right, forecasting and projections, so essential for the marketing, for the sales, for the buying teams, for the merchandising teams, but then even more essential when it comes to couriers, fulfillment, and all that good stuff. So you were saying you actually work with your brands, because I think usually in my experience, the fulfillment house goes, give me a projection, and believes what the brand tell them. But it sounds like you're taking these a little bit more of an integrated approach with those. So what would your tips be, Will, for getting your forecast, your projections as accurate as possible?
Number one tip is go early and try and get it as early as possible. Having a forecast that you write in October is slightly late, and you want to sort of be going into August, September with a sort of a plan for peak, I suppose. The other thing is, I suppose, be realistic, understand your growth over the year and work on that basis. And that's sort of done us in good stead in the past. And I say this in sort of direct contrast to be realistic, is that the third is be ambitious and be optimistic, because there's no point getting to middle of November and having no stock to sell. I would always go on the over optimistic side and say, if you've got, you know, a spare pallet of stock in January, but you haven't sold out and it's been a good peak, that's far better than running out 2 days after Cyber Monday and trying to get a quick restock in before Christmas. Because anything that sort of creates sort of a rush and a panic, one is not good for anyone's stress levels on the e-com side. I mean, we like to think we're relatively used to it. But one, it's not good for anyone's stress levels. And two, it's avoidable by sort of being optimistic. But an optimistic realist who thinks in advance means peak usually can be a total breeze.
E-commerce Master Plan is supported by some of the greatest companies in the e-commerce sector. Here's a reminder of who they are. It's time for the top tips round.
Okay, I love this section because it gives me and our listeners some really quick ideas over and above what you've already given us, Will, for taking our businesses to the next level. So, Will, are you ready for the top tips?
I think so.
Okay. The book top tip. If everyone listening to this podcast agreed to take Friday off and read a book to make their business better, which book would you recommend?
I would recommend Grow the Pie by Alex Edmonds. And the reason I'd recommend it, it's a very interesting book that changes your thought on what business should be. And it opens your sort of eyes to going, okay, maybe, you know, the bottom line's important, but there are also other things in life that are equally as important, if not more important. And for us at Little Dart, it's been a very useful book in sort of going, look, you've got the planet, you've got people. As a modern company in the 21st century, there's a lot more things going on that you need to be sort of thinking about rather than just, you know, the bottom line at the end of the day.
Nice. That's not what I've come across. So I'm going to have to go and have a look at that one myself. The traffic top tip, which marketing method do you either prize above all others or think doesn't get the press it deserves?
Prizing above all others is recommendations, which I understand is challenging on the product side. So I suppose if I'm sort of looking at for a product, I would say find out what works for your customer. So to that, you've got to understand who your customer is. But then you've really got to work not for what you think works, but for what works for your particular customer. And if you don't know, test, and just test again. And find your customer's niche and what speaks to them.
Perfect advice. Thank you very much. Totally agree with that. The tool top tip, maybe a collaboration tool, a social media plugin, a phone app, or just a way of working. Is there a cool little tool you use that makes you and your team more efficient from day to day?
We're slightly old school. As a team, we have coffee at 11 o'clock and we have afternoon tea at 4:15. And we all sit and we have a cup of tea or a cup of coffee and an enormous box of biscuits. And we genuinely spend 5-10 minutes chatting about how the day's gone. And I think from a fulfillment side, and one thing that, again, the way that our business is modelled on having lots of small sheds, it means you're going to have these smaller teams, which should mean that this can continue as we grow, rather than, you know, our team's never going to be 100 people in one warehouse. It might be at tops 12. And I think our afternoon teas and coffee mornings are genuinely excellent. I think on a Monday after, because Monday's the busiest day, and it's a very transactional world fulfillment in that when the lorries go, the lorries have gone. There's nothing more that can go on it. You're done for the day. You know, you've got ASNs and stuff to do afterwards. But there's sort of like the excitement and stress goes all the way up until the lorries are sort of loaded. And the moment they leave, it's sort of a massive sense of relief. Yes, we did it, guys. Everything's gone. And we sit down, have a cup of tea. And I think it really adds to our sort of team attitude and team structure.
Got you. So literally it's whatever the morning time is, and the second that the last lorry goes, it's down tools, everybody, kettles on, biscuit tins open. Let's pause for a minute.
Yeah.
How brilliant. It's so simple, but just to get everyone to catch up and see what's going on, I think that's such a cool tip.
You know, as a team, we're very close. And again, we're lucky we're a small team. And it's difficult to maintain it as you grow. But it's something that is genuinely important, I think, to all the members of the team and then to me and Ollie as we build the company.
And even on the busiest day of the year, which I would guess would be the Monday after Black Friday, you still do it?
Once the lorries have gone, there's nothing you can do. You know, lorries have gone. You know, we've got ASNs to do and we'll work through the night to get them in. But our busiest day pre-Christmas was absolutely shattering. We all sat there. I'd packed orders. Well, I actually hadn't. I wasn't allowed to pack orders. The team said I was only allowed to pick orders, not pack. which is fine. I was absolutely happy with my role of just picking orders. But it was absolutely shattering. I did 24,500 steps, which is a significant volume. And afterwards, we literally sat drained in the office with our cups of tea and we had cake, obviously, because it was a big day. And it was just a massive sense of achievement, sort of, which didn't end by sort of everyone sort of having to do ASNs and then go home. It was sort of like we're going to sit back, we're going to celebrate this moment. We had the order volume number on the big board and we were going, look, this is an unbelievable achievement, record-breaking across all years for us. It's so exciting. And yes, we're all absolutely exhausted, but we're going to sit and have a cup of tea and a bit of cake and, you know, give ourselves a pat on the back.
Yeah, it's like that just stopping to go, we did really good here, guys. Even though you can feel the next day weighing down upon you, it's so important to take that pause and go, nice work, team.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've got, you know, got an Arctic lorry of pallets to book in. That, but, and we can see them from the meeting room. But yeah, no, it's just good to sort of just stop and go, look, we've had an absolutely unbelievable day. Let's crack on. So I'd always say for the tool, it's back to basics with the team. So I think, again, one of the important things for anyone sort of in the phase of really quite fast growth and thinking about growing a team and developing your team is to get, and Alex Edmonds talks about this in Grow the Pie, is that start as you mean to go on. So like our afternoon tea, it's really important for us to sort of put that in now because it will shape the entire sort of company that you build. And we found that these little things, they don't take much to put in. And yes, they take quite a bit to maintain, but they change the sort of the corporate voice. You know, everyone talks about a purposeful company, and it's really important in sort of keeping people, and central to our business of sort of keeping good people doing fulfillment, is that we make it a great place to work. So I'd advise any company growing, if they've got great big visions of where they want to be, try and put it in place as early as possible, because it means that you can sort of develop it as you go along.
Yeah, and I just loved that your morning coffee and your afternoon tea, because for the price of a box of biscuits and a little bit of commitment. So I can imagine how big an impact that has on your team and therefore on everything you're doing. So I love that one. Okay, we are actually supposed to be doing the top tips. So everybody, the carbon top tip. What's your favourite way to reduce the carbon footprint of an e-commerce business?
It's not really sort of a general tip. It's give yourself a target. No matter what the target is, give yourself a target. We gave ourselves a net zero by the end of 2024 target, and it terrifies me. Because whilst we can do use recycled cardboard in our stock packaging, we've got solar panels on the roof of LDF2. We're going to put solar on the roof of LDF3. We still got, again, and the whole of the e-commerce world faces it, we still rely on couriers. You know, you still require a van to drive the stuff to someone's door. And you can, whilst we can outsource it to the big names, ultimately it's still classed as scope 3 for us and scope 3 for e-com. But if you give yourself a target, at least it gives you something to work towards, and you actually it sort of focuses your brain on how you're going to get there, rather than just sort of giving little things, well, not little things, but one thing, sort of having a recycling bin. Two, give yourself a target, try and get to it.
Brilliant. I love that. Thank you so much, Will. Before we say goodbye, could you please let the listeners know where they can find you and your business on the web and social media if they want to talk to you about fulfillment or even find out if you've got space for them?
Yeah, of course, Chloe. Thank you so much. www.littledartfulfillment.co.uk is our website. Or you can find me on LinkedIn, Will Martin. We have an Instagram at littledartfulfillment, which has got a picture of my beagle on it. We've been quite lucky in our marketing. So if anyone knows a good social media strategy advisor as well, to let me know, because that would be good for our personal marketing.
Awesome. So Littledart Fulfillment?
Littledart Fulfillment. And fulfillment with one L, not two. The Americans have two L's and we have one.
I can never remember which way around that is. So that's an extra tip for me. Will, thank you so much for being on the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. It's been lovely catching up with you, and you've shared so much great advice for the audience. I know they're going to love it. So thanks so much for being here.
Thanks, Chloe. No worries at all.
So there you have it. What does it take to do best of breed fulfillment in 2024? I guess the very first thing is to work out what sort of fulfillment you need to be doing. Do you need to be doing that brand building, or can you do the Amazon, we're just going to box it and chuck it out fast? And then you build the systems, the processes, find the partners, outsource to those who can help you deliver what you need to deliver. And I thought a lot of what Will was talking about was really, really fascinating. His tips around the predictions and projections were really good. Then we were talking about the team. I think that team coffee and tea, you just know what sort of warehouse you're in if everyone downs tools to have a biscuit and a cup of coffee when the lorries leave at the end of the day. Loved lots of his advice, very insightful. And obviously a lot there you can replicate if you're doing this in-house and you're looking to build the right pieces or do with your existing 3PL. You can get your hands on our notes from this episode, including the top tips and links to what we mentioned, by heading over to ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast. Or use our direct episode short links. Just put ecmp.info/ the number of this episode into the URL bar and you'll go straight to the correct page on the site. And when you get to the website, please do add yourself to our email list so you don't miss out on any of those other things I share to help you improve your business. If you like this episode, then why not check out our startup episodes? Go to ecmp.info/startup to find out some interviews from people who are in that startup phase building their D2C brands. Thank you so much for tuning in to this and every episode that you do of the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. I bring you a new interview every week because I want to inspire and help e-commerce business owners like you to succeed and thrive with your businesses, including progressing along the path to net zero. So if you know someone this show can help, please tell them to listen to the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. I hope you have a great week, and don't forget to keep optimizing.
Thank you for listening to the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. Find out more at ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast.